Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Baseball Tonight with Buster Olney. Major League Baseball has finally returned. So where were we? Buster will get you caught up on all you need to know about who the favorite is for this year's World Series and more with player interviews and the best writers and analysts in the game, like the legendary Tim Kirchner. Be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to BBTN now, as well as the right time wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Interview time this week. Joining us live from Detroit, Michigan, because of course he'd be in Detroit, Michigan. Check him out, Yahoo Sports, Vinny Goodwill. What's going on, man?
What's happening, Bo? Where else would I be besides the cesspool of New York City, right?
Look, dude, hey, let me tell you this, and you know this part is right, too. You left New York, you know, and it made sense at the time when you did, but I feel a lot safer here than I bet you feel there.
No and yes, because no, there, you'd have to get on the train to go places.
No, you ain't got to get on the train to go places. You don't go nowhere. Like, hey, that's number one. Number two, you got a car. You wouldn't have to worry about that. No, they got this thing largely under control here, man. It's the rest of y'all that's out here wilding.
Well, Michigan had it under control, and then they started loosening stuff up, and the numbers have raised.
That's what I'm saying. Y'all in that place. Look at this. I'm looking at this right now. Your man's Cuomo sent something out the other day. We got 31 states that if you want to try to come up in this, you're going to have to quarantine for 14 days. But guess what? Michigan, not on the list.
So, not on the list.
You know, so y'all should get up and say, we're 32. We're 32.
No, normally anything that has Detroit in it is usually not cause for celebration. We are operating on the right side of things now.
Dog, I looked at this list when it came out and I was like, yo, every time I think of a state, I look down and it's here. Like every state, I was just trying to pull them random at some point. I was like, oh, what about South Dakota? Oh no, South Dakota's not there, but North Dakota is. I bet South Dakota out here like, nah, y'all can't come down here.
So like Montana and Idaho, are they on the list?
Idaho is on the list. I think Montana is on the list. Like just about everybody is on this bad boy. I also thought it was interesting, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, Alaska is on the list. Like if you try to come to New York from Alaska, you got to quarantine for 14 days. And I'm looking at that like, who the hell doing that?
Well, hey. If you're in Alaska, you ain't in Alaska by accident. You're in Alaska because you want to be there. If you're in Alaska, the one place you don't want to be is New York. Let's just put it like that.
I would also say this too, that pandemic or not pandemic, if you're going to live in Alaska, I imagine summer is when it pays off, right?
Yeah, because that's when the high gets up to like 62.
You know my boy George. You met George.
Yes.
George went to high school in Alaska. I don't know if he told you that.
No, he did not tell me that.
Yeah. His father passed away his junior year of high school, and he had to go live with his mom, and his mom married a dude that lived in Alaska. And I'll just never forget, George said he got off that plane. He left Dallas, got off the plane in his heaviest coat, which was his Letterman's jacket. And I'm here to tell you, brother, that Alaska hawk about something completely different.
You need layers.
Yes, yes. Like, I would actually love for you to go to Alaska because you're from an actual real life cold place. Like, I'm not from a cold place.
But here's the thing. It's Detroit cold is different than Chicago cold, New York cold. Everybody's cold is different.
Yes.
And I bet you there's no cold like Alaska cold.
Right, but that's the thing. Like, I imagine that, like, you Detroit cold, you Chicago cold, you Minnesota cold. Y'all be like, man, I can handle anything. And then we get up to Alaska and be like, dog, it's cold.
Like, it's cold. Cold here. Like, nah, man, I'm getting back on this plane. I'm good.
I'm trying, like, what's the coldest you ever been?
There was a cold stretch, I think, in 2014 where it was negative degrees for like 2 straight weeks. And I sat in an airport. My flight got delayed or my flight got canceled. So I'm in Metro Detroit Airport. A flight got canceled. I was supposed to go to a game. And you're sitting waiting on like one of those take car theme ports, take you back to your car. And it's cold and the space heaters aren't working and the sliding door keeps opening and closing and you got luggage in your hand and you are just frustrated. You're like, tears come out of my eyes, cold, to go to your car, which is a different set of cold. So what do? Do you sit in your car? Do you wait on it to warm up? Do you get in the car and then you go home as fast as possible? Bo, I think I might have just turned 30 and I think I had felt all of the 30. All of it.
The coldest I've ever been outside is I inexplicably went to Chicago for New Year's once, and that was not a great idea. The coldest I feel like I've ever been, though, like it wasn't even really about the temperature cold. So after I moved to New York, I went down to Miami to do Highly Questionable for a week. But while I'm down there, they say it's going to get like below freezing when I'm back. But I didn't bring no coat. I mean, because I was going to Miami. But whatever the temperature was, I was like, nah, man, too cold. So I ordered me a North Face to be shipped to the office so that I could put it on, pack it or however I needed to do it. And then I have a coat when I got off the plane, right? And I got off the plane and that plan worked. But I got home and the heater at the crib wouldn't work.
Ooh.
That night, bruh. Because you don't fully realize it, right? Like you don't realize that your heat's not working for a while after you got in the crib. Because the crib is better than outside.
Right.
And so then after a while, you'd be like, damn, man, why is it so cold in here?
Did you leave the coat on?
Yes, indoors I did leave the coat on. You are correct. But I had to get in bed in like full sweats. I looked like I was about to get up and go jogging.
Oh my God, that had to be so uncomfortable.
It wasn't what was up. And then I found out that the heater wasn't broken. It just hadn't been cut on for a long time. So you had to do like to turn it off, turn it on, like in the box. But I hadn't been living here. You know, I had got there. Every year I know it now. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, but you had never really lived in like, you know, Atlanta can get cold. Houston.
No. North Carolina's the farthest north I ever lived.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And that ain't real. That ain't the story. You know what I'm saying? Like some things will happen every now and then, but it ain't cold.
I was going to say, did you ever have to like cut a heat on and cut it back off and cut it back on again before at any point in your life up until that point?
Not really.
That just wasn't a tool in the toolbox. You just had no idea.
No, also I hadn't had my heater quit before. That was the big thing. I just hadn't had no situation where the heater wasn't working. Every time, like I had the air conditioner not work. I know what to do then, and that ain't work on no tricks. That's get on the phone. When the air conditioner goes out, you do not try to repair it yourself. You immediately start trying to work something out. Like, at the very least, when your heat goes out, you can layer up. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That is not an option in that cold.
Would you rather be too hot or too cold? Which person are you?
Too hot.
Yeah.
All day long. Like, if I can't do nothing about it, too hot.
Because when it's cold, you can never get warm.
Correct.
There's no circumstance you can layer up, put blankets on or whatever. When you get too hot, you can kind of finagle it.
Yes.
But you can never get warm enough when it's too cold.
Yo, I tell you this, though. Something just dawned on me about the NBA bubble. You know what could make this whole experiment fall apart? Let the air conditioner stop working in one of them hotels.
Ooh. So wait, what player would be complaining the most?
All of them.
No, I feel like old guys, body changes.
I feel like if the air conditioner goes out in Orlando and we're pushing August, it'll be a race to be the first dude to get there. Like you say, it'll be an old head. It'll be a young dude because young dudes, they got a quicker first step. There'll be a union meeting about that. Like we keep talking about everything that's happened with this bubble and whether the cats can get along to reach a resolution, you know, find enough common ground. Everybody's got common ground when the AC breaks.
Dog, I didn't think about that. Orlando in August. Like, it's not as hot as it's going to be.
No. It's ramping up.
Put it like this. You know how many teams are going to be happy to get up out of there in like 4 weeks? We done did y'all this favor for this league. Like the Sacramento Kings. Imagine how happy you would be if you're the Sacramento Kings. No disrespect to the Kings. But if you're the Kings and you Marvin Bagley and you can't stay healthy and you out here doing this for the league and y'all don't make the playoffs – oh, get me out of here and take me back to Sacramento.
Or wherever, right? Like wherever I got to go to get out of here, take me back to it, man. Like, I do wonder how this is for these teams that know they ain't got no future in this.
The Washington Wizards.
And to keep their asses in shape to play ball for what, a week?
Not even a week. You got to go through the pre-training. You got to go with the training that once you get to Florida. You got to go through these exhibition games. And then you got to go through 8 of these regular season games without your best player. Your best player who's been playing with a bad shoulder since November put up career numbers, and then the bad shoulder is not worth it anymore. Don't get me wrong, Bradley Beal went for who, for what, but nobody else could go for who, for what. We out here shooting blanks.
Well, hold on. Davis is like, yo, I'm about to get paid.
I get that. Put it like this. And regardless of what people may say about how this may harm people, Davis Bertans is not one of those people who will be harmed in free agency because he decided to opt out. He doesn't fit into that demographic.
No, let me tell you, even if it would, Davis is what, 6'10", shooting like 43% from three on 9 threes a game. I worry, though, that he's going to be some version of, like, I'm trying to think of the one-year wonders who just did what they had to do to get that bread.
Like contract year Charlie Villanueva?
Yeah, yes. Because here's my thing about Davis. I don't know about him. Do you? Like, other than he's been making these threes this year.
Besides the obvious?
Yeah, I don't know nothing. Like, I don't know anything about his game. I don't know what he's been doing previously. For all I know, this is like a natural arc in his career that he's developing. Davis going to turn this into like $20-something million a year.
Yes,
I'm
he will.
I'm tall, and I can make 43% of my threes.
He is a delicacy.
Yes.
You know how many teams, like, there's another guy from UNLV, Christian Wood. He plays for the Pistons. He can defend the rim. He can shoot threes and finish. He's going to get all types of the money this offseason.
Yeah, because, like, can Miles Turner do all three? Because Miles Turner can protect the rim, and Miles Turner can shoot threes. Can he finish?
He's not really a strong finisher.
Right.
You got to get him there. Like, he ain't going to get himself there. You got to get him there. Like, he ain't going over the top of you, and he ain't finishing through you. You can finish through somebody, shoot threes, and protect the rim. You are as valuable as a two-way swingman at this point.
Yep. Yep, you're the 3-and-D guy.
Yes, that's the new one.
You can make it happen.
That's more than 3-and-D.
Yeah, that's real. That's real. Because 3-and-D is a different kind of D, right? Like, it's like that rim protection. That's the thing. We used to talk about shot blockers. Now we talk about rim protection because it's a different concept, but it matters, right? Like, guys just don't block shots in the numbers that they used to. Like, the game now is just being able, your presence stopping everything once it gets to the rim. If you can do that, you play forever.
And not just that, you make a dude think twice before he even gets there.
Yes.
I don't know if there's an analytic for that, like shots stopped from getting you there, but there's a value to guys saying, okay, I won't block 2.5 shots a game, but I'll prevent you from getting to the rim 10 times. I'll make you take a low percentage mid-range jumper before you get to the rim and can get me in foul trouble or something like that. Like, no, there's an inherent value in that, and teams are forever looking for that type.
Like, Embiid get in the middle of the lane, and it's like cats are shooting with their eyes closed now.
Someone massive. Do you know how massive Joel Embiid
is? He's so big.
But that was the one dude, Bo, I was worried about. That I thought he was going to come back and look like a Teletubby.
I did too.
I thought, you're not playing basketball. You are sheltered in place, and you're doing nothing but what, Shirley Temples? Whatever his, you know, topic du jour is of the day. I was worried that he was just going to look like just mid-heavy.
Well, I mean, every other time that he could miss a week and a half and he comes back like 10 pounds heavier. Like, he earned that skepticism.
Yeah.
He is back.
When he was in that hazmat suit, I was like, yeah, this looks like a joke. But take off that hazmat suit, Joel. Let's see what you hiding behind.
But here's the other thing I think, too, though. I think one thing he did know. Let me tell you who was going to come back in shape. We knew Ben Simmons was going to come back in shape. That competition is always going. And at least apparently somebody told Joel, you ain't going to be able to complain about him not shooting if you show up fat.
Because Ben Simmons can't shoot, he's always, always going to show up in shape. He knows because of the flaws that he has that he cannot.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now, one thing, like a little gear switch, not really a gear switch. We got to be honest as we talking about this bubble. You and I talked about this the other day because I asked you, like, when are the games going to actually start? And you told me, and I told you, I did not give a moment's thought ever at any point to when any of the actual start dates of any of this stuff was, because it never dawned on me that this was actually going to happen. I am blown away that, at least from what we've been told, the NBA seems to have found a way to make this work.
Dude, I got sent 110-page memo from the league you know, by somebody who was showing me all the security measures that they had to take, all the amenities, everything else. Like, this was a really, really ambitious venture that they were pulling off. And then when you got Dr. Fauci basically saying, hey, if anybody's doing it right, the NBA is doing it right. I'll tell you this, Bo. If there's one guy whose opinion I trust right now as far as an administrative person on all this stuff, it's that guy. And if he's saying, hey, the plan is a great plan, I'm a rock with him. I'll say this. The players got a pep talk, I believe, from Michelle Roberts, from the stars, and it had nothing to do with about the integrity of the game. It was, we got to get this money. If this don't work, not only will you not be getting paid for now, they're going to open up this CBA, and it's going to look bad. But if you're a dude who got, you trying to get your next contract, and you come off a rookie deal, or you incentivized. If you're a guy that's a 7th or 8th guy, and you want your big deal to stay in the league, you're incentivized. If you're a star, you just want this thing to keep going. So everybody had a motive to keep this train moving.
Yo, I understand why people like are viewing this very cynically. Like, those who are. I get where they are coming from. But they got to go get this money, man. Like there's just like the and I've been saying this from the very beginning, the financial consequences are so dire if they do not play basketball. And for the players in a way that is different than for the owners, because you're right. The owners can open up this CBA. Hell, they might still try to open up this CBA after this happens. But they got to go get this bread.
I think the owners are still going to open up this CBA after all this is over. Everything that I've heard, I would not be surprised. They're taking a bath in this. They're not getting butts in seats. Some of these people did not get their TV money. And you don't know exactly when you're going to get butts in seats next season. So you're going to try to, if it's one thing we know about these owners believe in protecting their own investment in this. A lot of these new age owners didn't get in this to lose money. You got to think, so many teams changed hands in this past decade. This is a new commissioner. This is not David Stern and first generations like the Jerry Reinsdorfs, the Bill Davisons. Those guys are gone. We got a whole bunch of Tillman Fertittas. And we can make jokes about Tillman Fertitta because he makes himself that, right? He puts himself out there. But it's a lot of these other owners who are a little more quiet, but they got the same concerns, man. They came into this to make money. They came into this to make money, Bo.
Well, I think, and this is an interesting thing to consider. Maybe one of the worst things to happen in sports is all these owners who have made owning these teams their primary bag.
Yes.
Right? Like, they made the money doing other stuff. But like Mark Cuban, for example. Mark Cuban made all that money on that internet stuff. But what job does he do 40 plus hours a week? He runs the Mavericks. Yep. You know, like all these guys, I feel like this wasn't really quite the case in that way before. Like, I remember there was a cat that owned the Rockets. Before Les owned the team, the dude named Charlie Thomas owned the team. And I know Charlie Thomas's name because Charlie Thomas was a car dealer. It was Charlie Thomas Chevrolet, Charlie Thomas this, Charlie Thomas that. You know, he had all the joints. And I felt like at least Charlie Thomas's job was running them car dealerships. Like, that was what he was doing. When he got off the Rockets was cool, but he was owning them car dealerships. Once the team becomes the primary profit center for one of these guys, which they kind of have to be if you're buying these things for billions of dollars at this point, then their intention and the way they go about this is going to be much, much different. And their spending game is going to be a little different. So like Fertitta's got other issues because I guess Landry's is maybe his main job. But damn, that's a horrible main job to have right now.
Dude, you got to think about it. Before, remember how you used to make fun of the Lakers for being a mom and pop business?
Yes.
Right. If you think about it, this isn't hurting them the way that it's hurting everybody else, because every business right now is hurt. Even if you've got something up, if you're in real estate, you're hurting. If you're into restaurateurs, you're hurting. If you're into a bunch of other things, you are hurting. Like, there's no safe haven for you right now. So the Lakers, they got that TV money. So they're good on that end to some degree. And I've heard that they're still possibly losing money, probably just because they don't own Staples. You know what I'm saying? But
right,
this is going to have massive effects down the line. And I think owners are trying to go into like revenue protection mode after this is over. This is their chance to open up this CBA.
Well, Hull, you make a good point though about arena ownership, but I think it goes in a different direction where they don't own Staples. And so therefore the reason they're not taking a bath in that way is, one thing we do have to remember is how many of these owners are like the people that run the arenas, right? The people that own the arenas. You know what they're not having in those arenas right now? Anything else right? Like, it ain't just that they're not getting butts in the seats behind these games. I'll never forget this. I met Jordan's man, Whitfield, Fred Whitfield.
Yeah.
I met him at some event in North Carolina a few years ago. And this was after Jordan had put out that letter about the bill in North Carolina that was called the bathroom bill, you know, and that a whole lot of artists had said that they were not going to do shows in North Carolina, you know, because of the bill. And Whitfield made the point. He was like, we got an issue over here. You know, we run the arena. Like, we don't get the concert money. And I was like, oh, that's why Mike took a stand. Got it. Right. All these other places, if you run that arena, them summer concerts, you not doing those. You know, the monster truck rallies, you not having those. The circus, it ain't happening. Like, all these other streams of revenue, they're gone from this. Like, I feel like if you're a football owner, there wasn't as much that you were going to be doing with your stadium.
If you're an NBA owner, and think about it like this, you may come back, but how long will it be before the entertainers want to come back into to these arenas? The liabilities and everything else. How active will people be in trying to put on concerts or Disney on Ice, where you got to put a bunch of kids into these arenas? If you can decide that you want to fit your arena at 50% capacity for a basketball game, that's one thing, because the NBA has certain insurances and everything else. Well, all these other artists and entertainment venues or entertainment streams have those same protections to where you will feel comfortable bringing them into your space. And if the answer is no, then you got to find a way to try to make up that money on the front end of this.
Yeah, let me tell you something about these entertainers. Who's going to be willing to do a show? All of them. They so ready. I can't imagine how ready everybody else is. Like, cats have figured out how to make money off the streaming and stuff like that. And the internet, I guess, makes it easier to make music without people having to be in the same place. Now, as soon as people start, at this point, you ain't really making money selling records. You're making money selling merchandise, and you're making money doing concerts. I can't imagine how ready they are to do these damn concerts, man. Like, just, oh boy, this money, like, everybody's money got hit in a way that I just don't think that people fully appreciate. Like, the owners, they're going to open the CBA. The problem is they're going to be greedy, right? Like, they're not going to be awesome, let's just do what's fair, or so forth and so on. That's not what it is. Everybody had to come out here and get this bread. The players need this bread, the owners need this bread, and it's all because they have made decisions with the expectation that they were still going to have this bread.
Well, here's the thing. This is truly an unforeseen circumstance. Like, the players can't really blame the owners. The owners can't really blame the players, although they will. Like, we know how this is going to go from a public relations standpoint after all this is over. And I think the players knew that they were not going to get the benefit of the doubt from the public, from a... Oh, you're going to collect your money and not work?
Right.
I don't think that that was going to happen. I don't think that that was going to fly well with the public. So now on the back end of this, wait, y'all still want all of y'all money and no fans are going to be at these arenas, at least for how long? I've heard March could be the earliest that we let fans into the arena. So you think the players are going to be getting 100% of their salaries? Or we just going to recalculate this basketball-related income and keep this train moving? And then all of a sudden on the back end of this, Bo, when everything gets back to normal, you think the owners are going to say, oh, in the interest of fairness,
we're
going to give it right back to you. We're going to take that money out of escrow and give it back to y'all. We're going to see how that works.
I think the only way that they're going to be able to make this work is there's going to have to be some provision in whatever they do that's going to have escalators or whatever at certain levels of revenue. Like, that's the only way that they're going to be able to do this. Now, I also want to be fair to the owners on this, and I don't think they was necessarily right or wrong about this, but from what I can gather, the money thought that we was going to be back to life, back to reality in July. Like, I had been hearing that going back to like April and May and talking to multiple people, and they really thought that everything would be under control by July. Like, they were led to believe that we were going to be able to resume some sort of normal life, except we didn't do anything that we needed to do in order to make that happen. I don't know if you're looking at these numbers in New York, for example. They've gotten a lot better. Right. Like, I still don't feel comfortable about it, but it's reached a point where I'm not looking at people so judgmentally when I see them like eating outside and stuff like that. I'm judging people with no mask on, like that thing I'm still on. But they've gotten the things to a place in New York City that just feels a whole New York State. But it feels a whole lot different at this point. And now everybody else, they don't understand this. When we were on crisis mode, a big part of why the media reported it like it was crisis mode was because New York was on crisis mode.
So the lives that these people were living themselves, they were feeling it, right? So Chris Cuomo has caught it, you know, for example, and all this stuff. So it was all right here, and it felt that way. Now I'm looking at like Houston. I saw something yesterday. The mayor of Houston said that 25% of tests were coming back positive.
25%?
That's what I'm saying. Where they are now down there like it was in New York. But I don't know, as you know, as much as people talk about how annoyed they are this stuff, I don't feel like they're treating it like a full-on crisis in the way that New York had to, you know? So the governor's trying to figure out, after they talked all this, you can do what you want, we're going to get this money. They're trying to figure out how to walk that back a little bit. But at the same time, I don't think that those people fully appreciate what the level of crisis is, because I don't think the larger media is treating that as much like the crisis that it's turning into. I don't care how many people are dying.
Well, the crazy thing is, I think the messaging from the beginning made it seem like it was a big city New York issue. Like if you were in New York, or if you were maybe not necessarily Southern, but I felt like it was like a Northern issue. It was like an elitist issue, not a Southern country-ish type of issue. And when I left New York, what the first, right after the games were canceled, I left because it was just bad. But New York got to turn around so quick. And the problem was, to me, Bo, when the messaging said, you can get it, but you can recover from it, that took away all the sting for people having to take it seriously. When it was like an old people's virus and it was a thing that you could recover from, that was the incorrect, I won't say incorrect messaging, but it was incomplete. And all of a sudden, at a point, people just gave up. Like, people do not want to wear masks. Like, look, you got Dwight Howard out here, and we say, we have to decide, are we giving athletes the amount of country that we should? Dwight Howard's out here not in a mask. Dwight Howard's out here saying he doesn't believe in vaccines. Like, what side of the fence are we going to sit on when we say, well, these athletes have a lot of sway in the public and everything else? But when you say stuff like that, Bo, that is damaging.
It is. But I will say this. If there's any player down there, if you're like, one player is going to say this, if there's one player that, like, I'm glad is the player to say it, I'm glad it's Dwight. If there's only going to be one to do that. And you know why I'm glad it's Dwight? You seem to have a guess.
Because nobody takes him seriously anyway.
There we go. Like, if you're going to be the one to say this, be the person that don't nobody listen to. Not even your peers. Like, you think about this. Dwight Howard is a 16-year NBA veteran, future Hall of Famer, 3-4-time defensive player of the year. Don't nobody want to hear nothing you got to say. And thank goodness, because what he said was stupid. Like, AJ, I was at dinner once a few years ago with a Hall of Fame player and with a former coach, all right? We're talking about Dwight, and this coach is telling me about Dwight, and this is 2013, so this is when everybody is, like, really down on Dwight. You know, this is after what happened with the Lakers. And the guy's like, I just don't know if Dwight has the cognitive abilities to be a superstar. And I didn't know what to do, because if I had heard a white person talk like that, I'd have been like, yo, what you trying to say? You know what I mean? But it felt the exact same way coming from this dude, but I didn't have any facts on my side to go in the opposite direction about this, right? Like, I didn't have anything to refute this. I was just like, wow, that feels really harsh. And then I saw that fool talk about, I don't believe in vaccines. That's just my opinion. And I think that everybody should be allowed to have this opinion. And you know why we can't just allow Dwight Howard to have this opinion? I'm going to tell you why we can't just allow Dwight Howard to have this opinion. Because Dwight Howard got 14 kids. I know the number's not 14, but he got a bunch of them. And all I'm saying is, if he's out here talking about, I don't believe in vaccines, do you believe in Child Protective Services? Because I feel like we need to make a call and make sure all his kids ain't got no measles. Like, hopefully his baby mamas have learned and they all like, don't tell your daddy, but we're going to get you these shots. Dwight, we do not have to believe you. We don't have to respect your opinion on these matters. And here was the thing about it, because he said believe in an opinion. Okay, whatever. He did not appear to express this opinion in a setting that allowed somebody to say, because this is what I want to know, when he says, I don't believe in vaccines. That statement doesn't make any sense. Like, do you believe vaccines don't work? Like, do you believe that there's no such thing as a vaccine? Like, we're not talking about Santa Claus, Dwight. What do you mean you don't believe in a vaccine? So what is your problem with vaccines? I would love to hear Dwight, like, there's no answer to that.
Would you want to believe where Dwight Howard got his cockamamie theory from about vaccines? Do you want to hear him further go down this rabbit hole that he cannot dig himself out of to make himself sound dumber and dumber? On wax or just in general?
No, both. I really want to know what he's talking about. Because, like, all right, so the anti-vaxxers who are under this belief that there's some connection between vaccines and autism, right? There doesn't appear to be, like, a real link that they're talking about. But at least I understand the argument that you are making here. Now, is Dwight saying that he doesn't believe in the idea that a government should force you to, you know, put something into your body? I mean, do you think Dwight's thought this out that far?
No, I don't, which is why I'm not taking it seriously. Even if your statement has some type of factual belief behind it, if you can find it, I don't trust Dwight Howard to be the one to have that line. I don't trust him, and neither do you.
Yep, but that's good. That's like I say, let him be the one to say that. Like, LeBron get out here and say it, we might have a problem, right? Like, this might be a thing if LeBron does it. If James Harden, right? If he gets out here and says it, it might be a problem. Luka.
If James Harden says it, will it be a problem? Remember the bandana he showed up with?
Yeah, that's true. But, like, isn't he a big deal in China? You know what I mean? Like, we got to think about the worldwide influence. That's all I'm saying.
Now, that part is true.
And that's all I'm saying. This Dwight, I don't think he got the influence nowhere. I don't think Dwight got the influence in Atlanta. I'm not even sure Dwight got the influence in his house, and I'm pretty sure he lives alone.
Well, here's the question. What do you think LeBron's reaction was when he heard Dwight Howard say that?
Just the eye roll. Just like how much eye rolling his eyes at Dwight has LeBron chosen to do this year? Because look, you and I have talked about this with Dwight, and it is the strangest thing. Nobody thinks Dwight is a bad guy, but the level of disdain that people in the NBA have for him is like, it'll catch you off guard.
It's off-putting because I don't know if you've ever been in the same room with Dwight, but he comes across as a regular dude by and large. But the one thing, like you said, he tries too hard to make people like him and he comes across as like annoying. Or he says the wrong thing at the wrong time, like the vaccine comment, like the why do I gotta wear a mask in public comment. Fool, because you're trying to protect this money. That's why. Don't you get it? I feel like that is the usual reply to when Dwight Howard says something. I feel like you got to pull him to the side and say, fool, don't you get why we doing what we doing here? And he says, I get it. And then goes out and says the exact same thing. I'll give you the perfect example for that, Bo. My birthday is December 4th, okay? Back in those days, the cutoff date for when you were allowed into school was December 1st, all right? I got snuck into school because my parents did not want me sitting at home, and I knew way too much at that age to be sitting at home. So my birthday came. They fudged the numbers and all sort of type of stuff. They thought they made it look like I was a year older than what I was when I was in kindergarten. So they said, Vinny, when they ask you how old you are today, what are you going to tell them? 6. So they drilled me on this for an entire day when I was turning 5. So I go to school. Vinny, how old are you today? 5. That's Dwight Howard. Dwight, what do you say when they talk about vaccines? I say I believe in a vaccine. I hope we can find one. Dwight gets on a live stream. Dwight, what do you think about this vaccine stuff? I don't believe in vaccines. That's just me. Fool, that's not what we rehearsed. That's Dwight Howard. That is not what we rehearsed. This is not what you were supposed to say in public, fool. This is what Dwight Howard is.
I wondered if anybody even bothers to rehearse with him.
Not anymore.
At what point do you give up on trying to get him to say the right thing?
I would venture to say probably after that first year in Houston. Because he was a big enough deal in L.A. Remember all the D12 stay stuff and all sort of type of stuff? So you were trying to make sure that Dwight said the right things. And then when he went to Houston, you probably still had something. Because he was still a fairly productive player. So you had to train him up a little bit with, you know, with the PR staffs and don't say this, don't say that. And Dwight just did what Dwight does. I think he's past the point of no return. I think it's funny. And I think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I think he's one of the greatest defensive centers of this generation. There's very few people from a defensive side. He's probably top 5 defensive center of all time. Maybe number 5.
He's up there.
Probably put Robinson, Elijah Wan, Jabbar, and Russell. And that might be it.
Yeah. He's just Dwight Howard.
And then I would probably put him above Mutombo.
Yeah, well, see, Mutombo was a defensive center for a different era, right?
Because he didn't have to jump out.
Dwight was futuristic, you know, like he's not Olajuwon, obviously, but he is kind of, I think it's fair to say, I don't want to say a poor man's version of Olajuwon, right? But he's like a stronger version of Olajuwon, but he gives you a lot of the versatility that Olajuwon gives.
I'll give you this one. Is he an upgraded Alonzo Mourning?
It's a good question. Because again, Alonzo Mourning, another center of a different era. Olajuwon feels like the best comparison, style-wise and size-wise.
Yeah, because that's what I was going with Mourning, because Mourning's not that tall. And Olajuwon's not. Like, we say 7 feet. We give 7 feet to every center.
Yeah.
All these guys ain't 7 feet, man.
Well, Olajuwon was like a wrestling 7 feet. They're like, yo, he from Africa. That make him seem even bigger. But Olajuwon is like 6'9" and a half, 6'10".
Yep.
Olajuwon's out of all those guys. Like, Olajuwon and David Robinson are the two where I'm like, oh, no, they can play today. If David Robinson played today, David Robinson would be shooting threes and like all this other stuff, but he could play today. Olajuwon, same thing. Olajuwon would be facing the basket, shooting threes, you know, all of those things if he played today.
Olajuwon would be illegal. Like, when you hear illegal, he would be illegal offense. He'd be illegal everything. Like, you could not game plan for Dream now. Like, playing 18 feet out, being able to do all these other things from all these different points of the floor, and he could probably play pick and pop too, he would be illegal. All these things that we say about big man, we can't build around a big man, he would completely change that.
Yeah, and the other thing about Olajuwon, he is an ornery man on the floor. Like, after he went off and got the H, right, and he started chilling out and talking all that stuff. But prior to that, I told you, my brother had a friend who said he used to sit courtside at Rockets games, and a ref make a call Olajuwon don't like. Olajuwon look at him, point his finger. Suck my No. In fact, just the other day, SportsCenter had done a thing. It was like the top 10 foreign born players, and they had Olajuwon. And this is old Olajuwon, right? And it's old Olajuwon, and I know it was old Olajuwon. It was the white Rockets jerseys with the blue pinstripes and with the science project in the middle, right?
Yeah.
And Olajuwon did some Dream Shake type move, and as they go to like the slow-mo at the end of the move, it's Olajuwon pointing at the ref and screaming.
So you're not talking about Hakeem Abdul Olajuwon. You are talking about Hakeem Olajuwon, the serene, the champion, right? That's the one you're talking about.
Yeah, Hakeem was chilled out. And let me see if I can find this quote from Olajuwon, because I remember this very clearly from when I was a kid, but I want to be careful about these things, you know, because sometimes you don't remember them right. But I know for a fact that Olajuwon said this. Rodman said that he had sexual fantasies about men. And he said that everybody, like, it wasn't just him, right? This is what he said. And so in 1995, they covered their ass Hakeem Olajuwon about this. And Olajuwon was very diplomatic. And he says, and I, you know, I generally don't do accents, but I feel like the accent is necessary to really drive the point home on this one, right? And he says, sometimes when you think something, you think it, and you think that everyone thinks the same thing. He is wrong. He is wrong. Olajuwon was like, no, not me.
I can't believe it. I never saw that quote.
Oh my God, me and my brother talk about that 25 years later. Me and my brother talk about that to this day. Sometimes you think something and you think that because you think this, that everybody thinks it.
Oh my God.
He is wrong. But of course, and I turned down the he is wrong in this telling of the story, because when we told this story before, we were like, he is wrong. We were not. Dream was not co-signing Dennis Rodman's madness. Can you imagine if Dennis Rodman had given that quote and he played for the Bulls and they had to come talk to Jordan and Pippen about it?
Oh my God.
Hold on. Let me ask if you remember this. Dennis Rodman played for the Lakers for like 2.5 weeks.
Yep.
Do you know the game I'm about to talk about?
The Kurt Thomas game.
Yes, 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 yes. So for those of you who don't remember, Kurt Thomas used to play for the Knicks. And Kurt Thomas always kind of had this look in his eyes. It's hard to explain.
No, it's not. No, it's not. It's not hard to explain. Kirk Thomas always looked like you were one chicken wing away from him running into the stands on you.
Yes, yes, yes. And so Dennis Rodman is guarding him. This is like an NBC Sunday game, Lakers and Knicks, right? The big markets.
Yep.
And so Dennis Rodman is guarding him. And it seems very clear that Kirk Thomas has come in telling himself, I ain't going to let him do me like that. I ain't even going to let him do me like that. You know, like he's just like, it's not getting in my head. Nope, not going to happen to me. Not going to happen to me. And I don't know what Dennis Rodman said to him. I don't know what Dennis Rodman did to him. I don't know what tripped it off. But next thing I know, Kirk Thomas is trying to take this dude down to the ground. And the look on Kirk Thomas's face is, I can't believe he said that to me. I just can't believe he did that.
No, I think he came in with a different mindset. I think Kirk Thomas came into that game because literally, folks, if you don't, you can find this clip on YouTube. He literally dragged Rodman from his jersey across the floor, to which Rodman, you can't see anything of Rodman provoking him. Normally, you see Rodman doing something to upset a player. There was no evidence of that. I truly believe Kirk Thomas came into that game saying, first chance he do, I'm going to f*** him up. I'm not even going to take it. Put it like this. I've heard Shaquille O'Neal say things like that in reference to players he was mad at. I'm going to mess him up. I think that Kirk Thomas took that tack going into that game. It's a Sunday game. He's not going to embarrass me. We on national TV. You got to think Kirk Thomas was not a dude who had a whole bunch of national TV shine. He went to what, Texas Christian?
With TCU, yeah. He was the leading like,
score and rebounder.
Leading score and rebounder, yep. Yeah.
He was leading. Look. And this was Dennis Rodman at age 38 with zero left to give, right?
Right.
Kirk Thomas was like, look, man, first chance he get. He probably told Chris Childs in the locker room, don't worry about it. First chance he gets.
No, except I felt like he was holding it in, and then it just couldn't go no more, right? Then it was just a wrap. Was that the same game?
I think that was the same game, because I know the game you're talking.
They both happened at Staples.
No, that was at the Forum. That's the last year of the Forum.
Right. But either way it goes.
No, that was the Chris Dudley game.
That's the Chris Dudley. You're right. The Chris Dudley game's at the Forum. The Chris Childs game is the following year at Staples.
Yep.
This is 99.
Yep.
You're right. This is 99. The Chris Childs game was in 2000.
Yes.
Wow, Lakers-Knicks, quietly far more eventful than we had given itself credit for being.
The Knicks, good for something, because they ain't good for winning.
No, they're not. They're not. By the way, do we have any idea how this is going to go once the season starts back? I just watched Nikola Jokic play point guard.
Did you see Bobo?
I did. The question with him is going to be, A, can he guard anybody on the perimeter? And B, just is his body like that? Like Porzingis is the same thing, right? Like dudes that are 7'3", 7'4", how much can they actually, like, physically withstand?
I don't know how much they can physically withstand, but here's one thing I will say. If you're worried about a team having stage fright in the playoffs because they've never been there, they've never done it before, this year kind of removes all of that. If there's a way for you as a role player to take out intimidation and all these other type of things because you just hooping, this is rec league. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is not rec league. This is pro-am. This is pro-am with just music in the background. No fans taunting you or nothing like that. Yeah, you got the eyes of the world on you. Ain't nobody going to catch no stage fright. If somebody catches stage fright, we know that they can't play. We know you ain't built for it. If you can't handle it this year, right now, you ain't going to be able to handle it. So Denver could be just as dangerous as Houston.
And yo, I mean, I can't believe Jokic looks like this.
He looks like half a Jokic.
I thought he was Porzingis.
I can
like the first time I saw a picture of him, I thought he was Porzingis. Do we like Big Joker? Do we like Little Joker? Right? Like, which one's the guarantee? You know what I mean? Like, we don't know. Like is the Big Joker the one with the guarantee? That's going to be the question that we have here. But I think, was he ever, like, I feel like he was really big, but I don't feel like he was putting that big into action.
I felt like he used the big to his advantage, but not like a big to where, you know, Rick Mahorn, big booty type of big.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But just like, this is part of the package. This is just who, because he's beating you off skill. Now, he may use that big underneath the rim because he can't finish over the top of you. He may use that girth. Now, I'm curious to see how he finishes under the rim, if he finishes under the rim. But if they keep him out there 15, 20 feet and just have him, you know, play Sabonis ball, then we got something here. He could be, this is a bonus.
Like, that's the thing, you just named it. He's a bonus. Like, I've been trying to figure out the proper comparison for him. And you're right. He's Sabonis. And that is a frightening thought.
We got to see old Sabonis. We didn't get to see young, non-Achilles Sabonis. This is maybe the closest thing that we get to see to real prime Sabonis. And Jokic, and I don't even consider Jokic a superstar. I don't know if you do, but I think there's three superstars in this restart. Three. Giannis, Kawhi, LeBron.
Yeah. This is my metric for superstar, right? do you have a chance to win a championship just because we got you? Mm. And I think those are the three guys who fit that description, yep. right? Just because we got you, we got a chance. Like, we'll work the rest out. But if the first thing you tell me is that this guy plays for us, then we got a chance to do this.
So if that's the case, there's five in the league then, basically.
If I mean, can you name two out after those two?
A healthy Kevin Durant?
Yes. Yes. A healthy Kevin Durant and Giannis.
And a healthy Stephen Curry.
That's an interesting question that you raise. Because I feel like even with a healthy Stephen Curry, you got to put some fairly specific things around
him. But you got a chance.
Yeah, but to have the chance, you have to put this fairly specific set of things around him. And he can't guard nobody.
Even with that, you can win with him in a way that maybe you can't with Damian Lillard, maybe in a way you can't with Kyrie Irving, two similarly skilled players. There's a difference.
Yeah, I feel you, but this is what I'm saying. I feel like if you tell me that you have Kevin Durant, you have a chance to win the championship.
Yes.
If you tell me you have Kawhi Leonard, my immediate response is, you have a chance to win a championship. And the same with LeBron. You tell me you got Steph, I want you to tell me a little bit more.
So do you put him above or below James Harden?
Above.
I'm with you.
My only problem with Steph, though, you know me and what I care about. This is a big problem. Getting his own shot.
Mm-hmm.
He could get his own shot if he shoots it for 40, like coming across the line. And he's got like sick handle and all of that stuff. There's something different. It's hard to explain what it is with Steph, but Steph is somehow like the greatest system player of all time. And I'm not saying that to shade
mm-hmm.
him,
mm-hmm.
but you are not going 1-4 flat.
No, that's the thing.
And being like, get us a bucket.
That's the thing. The thing is, even Little and Kyrie are different in a way that you can tell them, go get me a bucket in a way that doesn't involve, and this is not a shade to Steph Curry when I say this, trickeration.
Yes.
Like, everything with Steph sets up off of the shot, off of the threat of him beating you off from 35 feet. So when he crosses you over, he's getting you off your feet because you are worried about him stepping back and hitting the three compared to Kyrie or Dame. They're just getting you off balance completely in a different way than Steph. And I'm saying Steph's a better player than them, but it's a completely different paradigm with them relative to anybody else. I get it. That's the one thing that I have a concern about, because we saw when it mattered most, and what was that, the 2016 finals in Game 7, and granted, he was hurt. He couldn't get around Kevin Love.
Yeah, put it like this. You could tell Kyrie, go get me a bucket.
Yes.
Steph would be like, all right, fellas, let's go get a bucket.
Steph will find a way to give somebody a shot. Kyrie yes. will go get himself his shot.
Yes.
Put it like this. There's a bunch of other things that Kyrie can't do that Steph can, but the barest of essence, yes, Kyrie will get in his bag.
By the way, talk about Giannis. Are you one of those people who's on the, what the Bucks really don't want to do is see the Heat in the playoffs?
Wow. Because they got Bam.
Because I'm that guy.
Because they got Bam. Not only do you have Bam, who he can't just flat out muscle, right? Because I think that's the thing. You can't, if you don't have anybody that's long to stay in front of him and muscular enough not to get bullied by him, then you got a chance. And the Heat have disciplined defensive players. Like, we haven't seen them with Bam plus Jimmy on one side, plus Iguodala on the other side, taking away the angles. That could be an interesting series if it gets down to it. Because who do you trust when it comes to making coaching adjustments? Do you trust Bud or do you trust Spo? Because I think Spo still one of the top five coaches in basketball.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Who do you trust?
I don't have a reason to trust Budenholzer right now.
I think Giannis, and someone told me this, and I'm not sure if you're of this belief. Common belief is the Bucks have to get to the finals for Giannis to stay. Someone says, no. The Bucks have to win for Giannis to stay. What side of that fence do you sit on?
I don't know what's important to him.
Mm-hmm.
That's where this comes down to. Like, what is important to him? All right, so I felt when LeBron left, it would have been stupid to stay. I just don't think, like, it wasn't possible to win under those circumstances.
The first time.
Yes.
LeBron has left three times, so you got to differentiate which time you were talking about.
Yeah, but I also think that each time he left when the window was over.
Yeah.
The first time, there wasn't a window.
Right.
But when he left, it was time to go. They just weren't going to be able to win. I think the same thing kind of happened with Durant in Oklahoma City, where he looked at it and he just thought the window was closed. Now, I don't think that was guaranteed, sure, closed window with that team. I think they still had room where they could improve and get better where they were, right? But, you know, he'd been there X amount of time. He decided to go. Is Giannis looking at the Bucks and saying to himself, we can't take this no farther? Like, does he look at this and think that this is the best we are? Because what I think has changed now versus, like, the team they had last year is Chris Middleton is no longer just some other dude to have on your team. I looked at the Bucks and saw, including Giannis, and was like, I don't think y'all got anybody that can go get their own shot. They do now. And that's Chris Middleton.
The difference between Middleton last year and this year is this confidence. I don't think the skill set has changed much. I think it's just been the positive reinforcement that, hey, if I need to get 35 tonight, I can get 35. They never needed him for that last year. So when the game came up, and you can probably say that was what game four against Toronto, they win that game. If they wind up coming back and winning that game, they probably win the title based off of all the circumstances. That was that swing game. And you didn't have another guy who could do that. Now, do you trust Eric Bledsoe?
It's all about size. The problem with him is size. He's Isaiah Thomas.
I'm from Detroit. You gotta clear that up.
I'm talking about the Isaiah Thomas that we just saw a couple of years ago in the playoffs, who, even though he could give you 30 a game in the playoffs, he'd also have moments where he was just getting his smacked because he's 5'10".
I knew that's what you were saying, but for purposes of your sake, the guy who just did the Jordan rules book.
I'm just saying this for you. Did the hair stand up on the back of your neck when I said that? You know what I'm saying? Do you have to catch yourself?
No, I didn't have to catch. I know you smart.
Yeah, I'm just saying though, but like reflex. Y'all, you say you Detroit dudes, man. Y'all got no sense of humor about Z.
Depends on what we talking about. Depends on what we talking about.
If it's anything that matters outside of Detroit, y'all don't have a sense of humor about it.
No, we don't. We ain't really playing that. We ain't really for these jokes. Okay, Houston dudes is like that.
With who?
Houston dudes is like that with Houston dudes. I done been around y'all. That's a whole different like breed of folk.
I'm talking about the way y'all are specifically with Isaiah Thomas. There is nobody that Houston feels like we got to defend before the rest of the world, because in Houston, there ain't no world outside of Houston. There's two kinds of people in Houston. People who think the whole world is inside of 610 and people who think the whole world is inside of Beltway 8. But they ain't really thinking too much about anything outside nowhere else.
You might be right on that. We may be a bit defensive when it comes to Zeke.
Yes. I'm not mad at you for being it. I'm just saying. I'm just asking you if you got a little tense.
That's why I asked you to clarify.
Yes.
I knew what you meant, but just for the sake of the record and for my Detroit people who were going to hear this and come at me for not challenging you, I had to set the record straight. That's all.
Well, you could have defended yourself. You didn't need me to defend you. You could have defended yourself. But anyway, let me ask you this, though. What about the Clippers, especially now that Patrick Beverley is gone and we don't know when he's coming back?
My concern for the Clippers, and I'm going to see if you ride with me on this, I think the Clippers are the best team. Maybe the best collection of players and the best team. But my fear is that they have too many guys that are good at getting their own shot. Sometimes, like everybody, when everybody has the green light, that's a concern. Like if you only got two guys with a green light and everybody eats off of Paul and Kawhi creating shots, at least that sets a pecking order. Now you got the Morris twin there who have been shooting a lot. You got Lou Williams who always has the green light. You got Reggie Jackson, I don't mind in his role because he's a backup. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But you got six or seven guys in addition to maybe the most complete player in basketball saying, I can get my own shot. Who's going to say no? Who's going to pass up them calories?
Well, Paul George is the answer. But that's who's going to pass up. That's who's going to be passing up these shots. Y'all got it. I can focus on defense. But I contend that the Clippers, one, they don't have people that can get anybody else's shot. Like that to me is their biggest issue. Their best playmaker is probably Paul George. I look at the Clippers very similarly to the 2011 Heat, right? Like they're really good with two or three dudes. And then after that, we kind of scraping this thing together. Like, there are guys' names that we know, and I'm not saying, like, Lou Williams is a bad player,
right,
but we like Lou Williams more than Lou Williams is good.
I get that. And a name I forgot, Montrezl Harrell.
Like, yeah, now that good guy to have, right? Like, that's the guy who doesn't need to be taking all these shots. But without Beverly, if you got to give all this time to Reggie Jackson, you have a problem because he is not passing up the calories.
That's the thing. I think it's one of those things, if you decide that Reggie Jackson has to play 35 minutes, and I think I'm of the mind to believe that Pat Beverly will be back. And I think Pat Beverly adds something to this team. Like, I think he's a guy that won't be afraid to say something to Paul George or to Kawhi Leonard. Not that necessarily anything needs to be said, but if somebody's going to say it, it's probably going to be Pat Bev. And in this situation, those margins are thin. Like you said, if Paul George needs to be more assertive, who's going to be the guy to tell him to be more assertive? It's probably going to be Pat Beverly, because it ain't going to be Kawhi. Kawhi just going to look.
Right. Nah, man, like Kawhi, if Kawhi get the ring out of these circumstances, it's a lot going on.
I mean, Bo, if you look at it like this, if you can say he's the most complete, healthy player, the most dependable player from a performance standpoint when he plays, why are we hesitant to give him that?
Because LeBron's still playing.
While that's true, here's my theory.
That's the answer.
Right. Here's my theory on that. If it's a game, LeBron will give you a game. LeBron can close in and give you a game seven if need be. I think Kawhi can get you a series.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen it. And by the way, Kawhi last year in the postseason, not the best version of Kawhi we've ever seen. Kawhi that year he got hurt was the best version of Kawhi in the postseason that we have seen. My thing is, I believe we have seen the best of Kawhi Leonard, and I don't know how long he's going to be able to keep this up. And I think that a big place where the Clippers got to win in this is that Kawhi got to rest those knees. Like, Kawhi is not on some, I just don't feel like playing. I don't think he can play any more than they play him.
No, I think there's like, I won't say chronic thing, but I think there's some, probably some debilitating issues. The thing that set it off for me was, at the beginning of the season, the Clippers sent a medical report to the league when they started resting Kawhi, and the league said, okay. Since when has the league ever given the Clippers of all team a break on something?
Right.
This ain't the Lakers. You know what I'm saying? So I think whatever the league saw with him, they said, okay, you know what? You guys can do whatever you need to do. And here's the thing that I don't think people get, and you understand this, Bo. Basketball players actually like playing basketball, because guess what? They still got to practice.
Right.
If we going to do it, I'm at least going to do it in front of the lights instead of practicing for free for 2.5-3 hours. So I'm with you on that. I think it's going to be a slow decline. Because if you look at it, Kawhi is bigger than he's ever been, like physically.
Maybe the strongest dude in the league.
But even back then, when it was the best version of himself, he was still a little more slender. Now he's bulky. He's preparing for that. And you got to wonder how long he can carry that weight.
No, and I just didn't realize really fully until last year just how easily he could get his own shot. Because his game is not graceful at all. Like, it's not a really fun game to watch. It is absurdly effective.
Well, look, the way that he looks at, you look at him getting the shot, you feel like somebody should catch it because he puts it right in front of you. But he's so quick and so strong that you can't catch up to it. Like, when you body LeBron, when you stick your shoulder to LeBron and LeBron buckles, you got something. So put it like this, two things to think about with Kawhi. He's got that shorter contract, right? That he can opt out after 2 years, I think, with the Clippers, which maybe he gave himself, but I think to some degree, they may not be too unhappy with, given how his body may work out. But right now, if this is the best of Kawhi Leonard, they're going to go for it right now, all out.
Yeah, I'm looking at the East too, because like I do think that Bam is a problem for Giannis, because he's strong enough and just quick enough. Like, you ain't got to shut him down, but you got to be able to slow him down. And they do have one of the rare players who could do that, because that guy for the Raptors was Kawhi Leonard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you have that guy, you have a chance. If Kawhi Leonard is as good as he is, but a different type of player, the Bucks win that series.
Yep.
You know, it was just the nature of what kind of dude he was. I don't know what Boston gonna give him. I'm trying to get my memory back about the NBA. Like, oh yeah, Boston, I remember they were really good.
Well, the thing that Boston gives you is Boston gives you four dudes who can get their own shot if healthy. Now, I'm not saying Gordon Hayward is like a Jason Tatum get my own shot, but to me, the name of the game in the playoffs is not can you shoot, but can you get your shot? And if you got good shot creators and a decent coach, you got something. I think the East playoffs is going to be a lot more fascinating. Like, I think we thought going into the season, Bo, that the East was going to be really fascinating, and then we sort of forgot about it. I think the East is going to be really, really fascinating. Because you got Boston, you got Philly with Ben Simmons going to power forward. You got four bona fide teams that you can see making the finals of things break right. On a team, and a team that was on pace to win, what, 67, 68 games, and it's still not a cakewalk for them getting to the finals at this point? Look, assuming everything breaks right health-wise, we're going to have some fascinating basketball in September, man.
I'll take it, man. Like, I cannot believe it's actually going to happen. I really just didn't think that this was possible. And they've still got a lot of moving parts they're going to have to get straight. And who knows if they actually finish it. I see what the NBA's done, and I don't think they're being reckless. Like, everything I look at with football feels kind of reckless. Mm-hmm. This hadn't felt reckless. And I feel like you have to applaud them for figuring out what they figured
they've
out.
They've earned the benefit of the doubt.
Yep.
Now, the thing that makes trip them up, Bo, I think, is when the families come in. I'm curious when they allow the families to come in, you know, after teams wind up leaving, will they loosen up the rules and stuff like that? Will all it takes is one family member. Will everybody get tested? You know what right. I'm saying? What happens if someone's ring goes off overnight? You know what ring I'm talking about, Bo? The ring that they mm-hmm. give the players?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happens when your mm-hmm. ring, what happens when your activity ring goes off overnight? What do you do then?
Tough call.
Why is LeBron not here today? He pulled his hamstring in his sleep.
Don't ask. But ladies and gentlemen, my man Vinny Goodwill, thank you so much. Check him out, Yahoo Sports. Appreciate the time, my man.
Glad we got this worked out.
Indeed, indeed. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our guest, Vinny Goodwill. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.